Have you rated the Music You're Missing podcast 5 stars yet? I know it's super corny to ask, but the more 5-star ratings we get, the higher likelihood our episodes get playlisted, which means even more exposure for the amazing artists we feature on the show. While you're checking things out, don't forget to follow along to the official Music You're Missing Spotify playlist to hear our favorite songs from the artists featured on the show. You're listening to Music You're Missing. My name is Brendan Jannetty, and today we are speaking with Katie Lynn Sharbaugh. Katie is a self-proclaimed horse girl whose viola-infused tracks have caught the attention of millions on TikTok, including some A-listers such as Noah Kahan, Olivia Rodrigo, Joshua Bassett, Maisie Peters, and a whole lot more. Katie is calling in at such an exciting time because she recently signed to a record label, and spoiler alert, she has something very exciting to announce on our call, so stay tuned. Without further ado, let's welcome Katie Lynn Sharbaugh on the Music You're Missing podcast. Welcome, Katie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Post-eclipse, feeling a little bit cleansed astronomically, I guess. Doing good. How about you?
I wish I was a little bit more cleansed from the eclipse. I'm kind of bummed. Did you get to like actually experience it?
Yeah, so I actually drove like 3.5 hours outside of Nashville, which is where I'm based. And I went to Indiana and I went to this like park in the middle of nowhere and it was pretty close to like 100% totality. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. It got super dark. It was dusk. Yeah, it was cool.
That's really sick. Cool. What time of day was that for you there?
It was 2:03 PM.
Oh, sick. Okay. So I had a flight early in the morning. I couldn't do anything for it, but I live in Boston and I live in a suburb outside of Boston, and it wasn't around till like 4:30, but we saw like something. It got a little darker, but also it was 4:30, so it was kind of like normal time for it to get dark. But I saw a little bit of it. It was kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, I saw more than I did in 2017, I'll say that, because I was in Philadelphia, so it was like barely there. But cool experience, for sure.
That is awesome. Well, you're no stranger to Boston, actually. You are a Berkeley alum. I myself am a Berkeley alum. I didn't do undergrad there. I did my master's, so it wasn't quite as like victorious on Nickelodeon as much as you probably experienced. I would love to hear about your experience at Berkeley. How was your time? And I guess like more seriously, do you think it attributed to where you are now?
Yeah, I describe my experience at Berkeley, especially because I don't know if you know this, but I spent my first year on the Spain campus. I did like a first year abroad program. And that to me was very much like summer school. And I kind of tell people like summer camp. And I tell people that all the time, because that's what it felt like. It was just kind of like we had a little bit of class, but mostly we were just like partying and having fun and like, you know, hanging out and doing, you know, beach stuff in Spain. So that was amazing. That was so fun. I would say that what I always tell people when they're asking me whether they should go to Berkeley or a music school or not is that it's really... it's what you put into it. You get out what you put into it. And a lot of the times people go to music schools, not necessarily for the education necessarily, but for the connections that you're going to make and the opportunities that you're going to get. And that's what it was in my case, especially because my education was cut short by COVID. And I actually ended up graduating a little bit early because of that. Cause I was like, screw this. I'm not going to like be here when I can't use the facilities. So yeah, in my short time at Berkeley, I was able to make connections that I definitely wouldn't have had without going to music school. So in that way, I would say that I wouldn't be where I am without it. But I think I would have at this time, maybe. I think I would have gotten there, but it would have taken longer. So that's the long answer. I don't want to like trash talk Berkeley or anything, but like certain programs, like the songwriting program, for example, I felt like you just had to kind of either have it or you don't a little bit at the starting point before you even go into it. So it's like, how much are you actually giving me? Like, yeah. I already know about power chords, you know? So if you ask me if I learned anything at Berkeley, like, maybe, maybe. But I made some cool friends and I made an album. So that's what matters to me.
Hell yeah. No, I mean, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. What were some of your favorite Boston spots when you were here?
So my mind immediately goes to food because I'm a foodie.
Yeah, of course.
But I love Amelia's. I love like anywhere on Petersboro. I don't know if you know that area, but that's kind of where I was located at Berkeley. And they have like little cafes there, like little college type Thai, Vietnamese, Mexican, all on the same street. And that was totally where I hung out every single day. Where else? See, this is the thing, like, because of COVID, I didn't really go out that much, you know?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Your whole situation was definitely stunted.
Yeah, it was kind of sad. but I went to Fenway Park a couple times, always super fun. And then all my friends lived in Alston, so I was bumming out around there.
That's, yeah, definitely the classic college neighborhood. But obviously, like, you're killing it right now. That's how I know you, because you're doing so well. And I want to talk about that. But first, I want to talk about your, like, musical origins prior to even Berklee, because I think you have a really cool story. You started playing, like, the Irish fiddle in Ireland.
Yeah. So I feel like in order to understand my musical journey, you kind of have to understand a little bit of my just, like, general background. So I actually was I'm not Irish by blood, but I was adopted into an Irish family. And so I was very blessed to have the opportunity to travel to Ireland every summer until I was, like, 18 years old, because my grandparents, that's where they grew up. That's where they built their first home. So yeah, I would go there. My mom would put me in these little cute little summer camps at, like, these beautiful historic locations. Like, one of them was Kylemore Abbey, which is, like, this little, it used to be a convent, and it's nestled in the hills of Connemara, Ireland. And so it's beautiful scenery, and we would all sit in a circle and kind of learn fiddle tunes by ear. And so that was my introduction to music. My mom just kind of, like, wanted me to have fun, wanted me to try different instruments, because she had, you know, recognized that I like to do music. I took it to the States, and they said to me, we have too many violin players. And so at that point is when I picked up viola, and I was like, okay, I'm going to get into more orchestras and chamber groups and all that, and into more programs if I play this instrument.
Yeah.
So, that's when I started viola, and it kind of grew on me, and I was classically trained all throughout high school, and now I'm using it for good.
And you play the viola, you play the violin, you play piano, I actually had to look this one up because I saw it and I was like, I don't even know what instrument that is. The auto harp, is that it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I play the auto harp. I would say it you know, it exists in my home and the way of that, you know, it gets played sometimes.
What is an auto harp?
You know, it's like this like board thing, and the way that you play the strings is that you press buttons, and the buttons have the names of the chords on them. So I don't even know much about it, honestly, but, like, you just hold it like this and you hold down the button and you strum.
Okay, but there's definitely a video of you, like, absolutely shredding it on the auto harp somewhere. Like, I had to Google it. It was like, I've never seen this contraption in my life. It's clearly, like, you're one of the people who are, like, you are definitely born with, like, a musical talent, a musical gift. And it's, like, cool to see you kill it in a modern way, like, on TikTok, but you also, like, have such, like, a classical background. I think that's something that's missed right now.
Thanks.
And speaking of killing it, obviously, you're kind of blowing up on TikTok. That's how I found you, with Omaha. And from, like, a consumer standpoint, it's interesting that a song like that with a viola had such a moment. I'm kind of curious, like, were you surprised that that song went so viral on the app?
So I feel like there's multiple answers to this, because when I wrote Omaha, I was trying to really get up close and personal with myself and with, you know, just seeing what other people are doing, not saying that I was, like, copying someone else. I don't want to say it like that, but, like, you know, Noah Kahan is super popular right now, and he, all these styles of music that are becoming popular are very, like, introspective, I feel like, and music is turning in the way of, like, personal experiences in songs and, like, really specific things, and like, names of cities, for example, is one thing that I feel like is popping up a lot in pop culture, and that's what I was thinking of when I wrote this song. But actually, the song is based off of a real-life conversation I had with a stranger on a plane about my ex. So I didn't necessarily think that people would connect to that specific story so much. But I knew, I had already known a little bit from my previous videos that people were into the whole viola playing thing. So I was like, why not just try it again? And we'll give myself a challenge by choosing a random city that, you know, not a lot of people talk about, Omaha. And seeing if it does well. And I guess the trend worked.
Wait, that's fascinating to hear. That was the song is a real story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real conversation. Everything that's in the song is, like, a real thing that was said. So
did you write it like immediately after the conversation, or did it come later?
It was a couple days later, I would say.
Oh my God, do you keep in touch with the stranger? And did they know
no.
that?
No, he has no idea. He's like a middle-aged man. I doubt he cares or has heard it.
That's awesome. I was on a plane yesterday, and I was extremely, extremely hungover on the plane. There is no way if I were talking to anyone, they'd be writing a song about me. Unless it was like, there's a creep man on the plane who's like throwing up in his seat.
You know, I'm pretty introverted too. So like, I would say most of it, it's a one in a million chance that that happened. So it probably won't happen to me ever again either.
No, but I loved it. And like I said, I think the sound is really cool. And it's something I just like don't hear a lot. So it's really interesting to hear. It was like semi-calculated, but also obviously organic as well. So many of the artists that we have featured on the show have like had an experience on TikTok or a moment that like kind of helped them get their name out there a little bit more. And they always all mention that they kind of have like a love-hate relationship with the app. I'm kind of curious, now that like creating content is a necessary part of being an independent artist, like how do you feel about that aspect of being an artist, and do you enjoy it?
Yeah, I totally sympathize with those feelings about TikTok. And of course, I've been there as well, where I've been like, oh my God, I just really don't want to do this. Or I like eat up all of my day basically making one video, and that doesn't even do well. Or like a lot of people don't see. But I always try to remind myself that like I just recently quit my job, by the way, to like focus more on my career. And like as I'm, you know, progressing in my career, I realize like this is a job too, right? That I've kind of chosen this as my career and my job and the thing that's going to ultimately hopefully make me money. So I think to myself, like in any other job, I would have to do things that I don't want to do or that kind of piss me off or that I think that like are not the way that things should be done. Right. And I would feel that way in any job, whether it was serving, teaching music, you know, a 9-to-5. And so I kind of try to remind myself of that and say it and to myself that like, of course, it's not going to be all roses and peaches and whatever, no matter what I'm doing. So if this is the way that the game is played, I'll play it for the chance of being able to do what I love every single day and get paid for it rather than like doing some stupid serving job, which is what I was doing for a while. You know, I'm dealing with all that bullshit.
I really love that perspective, honestly. And it's also, too, to be said, it's like, it's not like you're going out there and selling your soul. You're finding a way that it adapts organically to your music and your brand. And it's just inevitable. Like there are some things that you just straight up need to do to have a better chance of success in this industry. And I think you already knowing that is huge, because then you have even more time to really target those little intricacies and help get your music in more ears.
And I want to add, not to say that it's not draining, because it absolutely is. And I hear that. And like, I have taken breaks where I haven't posted on TikTok in weeks, you know?
Yeah.
It's the way it is, and it is fun, and you can have fun with it, and you should. And also, you need to like separate yourself from your brand sometimes and be like, okay, this is what I'm putting out into the world, and I intend this to be seen. But then like you have times where you turn your phone off and you go play for yourself and just have a jam. Like you should do both. Just be balanced, like everything else in life, you know?
And then, I mean, you also have times where Noah Kahan comments on your TikTok saying that he listened to your rewrite of Forever 9 times over. What was that like to see that Noah Kahan commented on your TikTok?
That was crazy. The most crazy part about that, the craziest, I can't speak English apparently, but the craziest part about that is that he had commented the same like the day before and was like, great job, this is great or whatever. And so that comment was the second time he had actually come back and looked at it. So that was what had a lot of weight to me, which was like, okay, I saw him once. And oh my God, he came back specifically and I saw him again. And then I saw him again when he posted me on Instagram, like when he reposted.
Yeah.
And then I had a little sidebar conversation with him where he's like, you know, keep up the good work. So it was kind of like a magical moment, but it was also kind of like reconciling my idea of this person that I idolized with someone that, you know, started from the position that I'm in right now. So it's kind of like a crazy reality check moment too, being like, this is a real person. He actually like, binges videos the same way I do on TikTok. And, and that's a really cool, validating feeling.
Yeah. And I mean, that rewrite was so good. Like you also did the same thing with the Too Sweet, by Hozier, like the way you captured the essence of the song, but then told it in a different way. That also is the way that the original artist kind of would have written it. I think is so sick. What's the creation process of those? Is it like a quick process for you, or does it take some time to like write those verses?
So it depends, but I would say with the rewrites, it generally doesn't take me that long. I think mostly because the melody and the chords are already fleshed out.
Yeah.
And when I'm doing my solo stuff, that part, I think, is what takes me the most time, or like I'm more inclined to rewrite over and over and over again and perfect until it's done.
Yeah.
So with that being already done, I can just kind of like pick and choose my lyrics and then make an arrangement and put it up. It's funny though, because like I see all these comments like saying that, what you said about this is how Hozier might have written it. And it's like, yes, exactly. Like I've listened to this artist for a while. I know the kind of topics that he tends to lean toward. Like he sings a lot about biblical stuff. He sings about religion, and like his vibe is kind of like dark and mysterious. It's just an algorithm sometimes. And I know some artists don't like to admit that maybe, or don't like to hear it, but it partially is. And then the rest of it is your own vibe and your style and how you perform it.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that just kind of goes back to you being an actually like good songwriter, is that you're able to identify those like patterns and things that people that have had success doing that do, and why they are successful in the first place.
Thank you.
But beyond Noah Kahan, you also had Joe Jonas, Olivia Rodrigo, Joshua Bassett, Maisie Peters, among many others, comment on your videos. I am kind of curious, unrelated to like the whole like fame aspect of it. What's it like having, I guess, gratification wise, like, did you feel more confident in yourself that you are getting this type of recognition from people who are so established?
For sure. Especially with Joe Jonas. That was a super bittersweet moment, because that song, Tornado Warnings, the one that he duetted, is kind of about feeling like you're unseen, especially in this industry. Because I had just moved to Nashville. I was trying to figure out how to book a show. Like, I didn't even know how to put a bill together for a show. Now I've played a million, some of which there were only five people at, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what that song was about, just feeling like no one sees you, no one cares. You're not going to really reach your full potential ever. And even if you do, like, people might not be there to watch you, you know? So when he duetted that, I was like, wait, this is what I've been like. I was like, this is my main character moment. You know, this is the climax after the bad moment, you know, the montage where the main character is super like depressed and like whatever. That's what that felt like. And yeah, icon.
That is very serendipitous for sure.
Yeah.
So I guess like where are you in your career, would you say? Because obviously, you know, you've had these moments and you are playing out. Do you have like a manager, a publicist? Are you signed to a label?
Yeah, I recently signed to Network Music Group, which happened like 2 months ago. This happened back when Omaha first came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been working with them for a while. I've been loving it so far. I'm in the process of releasing my first full-length project, which is going to be called Upstaged, and it's going to be divided into four acts, like musical theater acts.
Ooh.
So first one is actually coming out on the 26th. I'll be making like an official post for that this weekend. I'm super excited because I've been like sitting on these songs for 2.5 years now. So to me, I'm a little bit sick of them sometimes. But I'm excited for everybody else to have them and kind of just like keep the ball rolling with this label and my team. I do have a manager. And then my main goal for the next year is to go on tour, whether it's like with an artist or just like a run where it's just like a week or two. That's really what I want to do.
That is amazing. First of all, congratulations for signing and like making like the official next steps towards a full-time career in this. I'm really interested to hear about your potential like touring and opening slots. More so, what would your like what's your live set look like? Are you bringing out all of the instruments, or?
Usually I play with like a 5-piece band, so it'll be a bassist, an electric guitarist, who's actually my boyfriend and you know, roommate. Guitarist, bassist, drummer, and then my other roommate actually plays violin. So I've been toying with the idea of having like a half strings, half like electric band, where it's like me and Max like jamming on the string section, and then like maybe even a double bass, because Omaha has a double bass in it. So it's kind of in the works. I've played a couple shows solo, but I think it definitely would do better with a band.
Yeah.
So yeah, 5-piece, I would say.
Sweet. Yeah, and maybe even add the auto harp.
Maybe.
Make it a six
piece.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I would definitely love to see you play. I saw that you just played is it called the East Room or something? I literally saw it on like Instagram yesterday. And that looked awesome. That's great that you're able to play out. Do you play like every week?
Not every week, no. Yeah. Mostly right now I'm joining other people's bills until like I drop the first EP or even the second EP and have my own release show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've played the East Room like 12 times. It's such a cool spot. Shout out to East Room if you're in Nashville. Anybody listening?
Sick. I mean, all that to be said, it's clear that things are not that looking up. I guess kind of insinuates that maybe you're not at a good place right now, but you are, and they just look to continuously be getting better. But I'm kind of curious, like, what actual music industry goals do you have? I know you mentioned that you do want to go on tour. What else do you hope to accomplish in the near future?
Well, I mean, the main goal, like I said, is just putting this record out because, like, again, I've been sitting on it for so long, and I actually don't have what would be considered a full-length project out yet. I still only have, like, a double EP. So I think that'll feel really good to kind of feel like I completed something whole, if you know what I mean. And then, like, besides touring, I think I'm already toying with the idea of kind of, like, switching directions genre-wise a little bit. And I know that a lot of artists nowadays are doing that too. Like, Lizzie McAlpine's new album is very different from her old one. And I think, like I said before, the industry is going in this really cool direction of people just being super, super honest and stripped down. And I think that the viola will lend itself to that too. I'm really excited to get a lot better at viola this year by hopefully like starting to write more on viola rather than sometimes I'll go to the piano and then switch to viola after.
Oh, okay.
But I'm excited to become more of a strings player and kind of enter maybe more of like a folksy pop.
Yeah, I think that would be awesome. I mean, you do like the musical theater sound really well as well. So like a musical theater, like folk hybrid would be iconic.
Yeah, actually the album is kind of leaning towards that vibe. Maybe not as much the folk, but it's definitely like a musical theater concept album with the elements of pop, jazz, a little bit of folk, a little bit of rock. It's all over the place.
That's awesome. And I know you're working with a label for that. So can we expect like full blown like branding and like a cool like album cover, potentially a music video?
Absolutely. Yeah. I am still kind of, I'm on the fence about doing a full length music video, to be honest. Just because I know people have very short attention spans. And that's what TikTok's for nowadays. But I do have some really cool footage that I'm excited about that's very theatrical, Sarah Bareilles, you know, type stuff. And that'll be coming out very soon.
Heck yeah. So, I'm excited. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with me. I didn't know, obviously, because you haven't announced it. But I'm like super stoked. That's like, it's really exciting for you too that you're able to release that. And it seems like you have so much like creative freedom if you can do like a four-part musical theater folk hybrid. Like that's so unheard of right now. So I'm excited for you.
Yeah, it's great to be signed independently. I mean, not signed independently, but signed to an independent label.
Yeah.
Rather than a major, because, you know, I've been thinking about that too. And like, I just heard the horror stories as has everybody else, especially in the world of TikTok. It's like easy to prey on those artists. So I'm really happy with the situation I'm in.
Definitely. And we've worked actually with a lot of artists on that label. And I honestly didn't even know that you're signed to that label, but we worked with a lot of artists on that label and they always end up being my favorite. And they're always the happiest too. So I think you're in great hands. That being said, Katie, I wrap up every interview with this question. It's one of my favorite questions to ask artists, unrelated to music, unrelated to your career. What are some goals you have in the near future?
Okay. I would love to own some kind of farm when I grow up because farm life is kind of the theme in my life. I mentioned I grew up going to Ireland every summer and our property was, I mean, the town that we lived in is just a rural, like foot of the mountains town in Connemara. So we had farmland. My family had cows that I would help take care of in the summer. I'm a horse girl, self-proclaimed. I broke my arm falling off a wild horse one time. I took lessons for a while. I did summer camps and horseback riding. Like that is my thing besides music. So someday I really would love to own like a beautiful farm property with chickens and like a garden of food that I'm growing and horses and all that stuff. So.
That is awesome. That actually reminds me, I did in fact look at your entire TikTok like from 2020 to now yesterday, actually during the eclipse. I came across a video of yours, and it was like you going through your Nintendo DS, and it was like, I used to proof I was a horse girl, and it was old photos of you like on horse. I honestly thought it was hilarious. Really deserves more love. So,
oh my God, I'm so glad that someone saw that.
I'm gonna have to go back and repost it now. That's actually so funny.